1930s, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt addressed the nation through a series of radio broadcasts known as the Fireside Chats. His aim was to reassure the common man that our society would recover from its troubled times. But we're far from 1930, and I deal with a different kind of far. For a new era of worldly frustration, we offer a fresh conversation. I'm Greg Carlwood, and these are the Fireside Chats.
Hallelujah, Higher Side Chatters, drinking a little drink, smoking a little smoke, and enjoying another sunny San Diego day despite the global elite's efforts to suck life free of any enjoyment. I'm your humble host, Greg Carlwood, and today is the treat of treats, because anyone who's familiar with conspiracy culture should know the name of today's guest, Carrie Cassidy, and her long series of whistleblower interviews branded Project Camelot. A lot of the guests we have, I've learned about in the 6 or 7 years since I've been following Carrie's interviews, so this one feels like some kind of bullet point on the THC journey to me a little bit, and I am psyched that we could make it happen. She's interviewed a lot of great people, some of which still won't respond to my interview requests. I'm looking at you, Richard Hoagland and David Wilcock. But either way, Carrie was nice enough to strap in with me on a journey to the deep, dark depths of weird, discussing the many threads that make up the conspiracy cardigan, and we pull on as many as we can in this show. Please do make sure you're sitting down. Project Camelot and the Higher Side Chats in one show together might be enough to cause some fainting out there. Take a break on the heavy machinery. We don't want anyone getting hurt. And if this is your first time listening to the Higher Side Chats, don't worry. I do accept your apology, but there are a lot of great shows you've missed, so get over to thehighersidechats.com. Start combing through those archives. We got everything from Professor Griff to Jordan Maxwell, Jim Mars to Michael Tesarion, David Politis to Duncan Trussell, and more than you would want to have me list here. So do be sure to get with the program, and let's dive into it. A show about false flags, the war on comedians, raptors, dolphins, underground bases, secret alliances with ETs, Edward Snowden, and a little Atlanta sprinkled on top for good measure, with Project Camelot's Carrie Cassidy.
Here's a chance to run down the rabbit hole. He's asking who is really running the show. Pull back the curtain and take a peek. Puppet masters play hide and seek. Not a sunny walk to there and back. Greg likes it weird on the Higher Side Chats.
Alright folks, today is quite a treat because as much time as we try to spend at the deepest depths of the conspiratorial rabbit hole, it's only a drop in the bucket compared to today's guest. She's the godmother of conspiracy radio. Her name is Carrie Cassidy, the woman behind Project Camelot. Most of you probably know her well, but she's been interviewing the creme de la creme of conspiracy whistleblowers for almost a decade now, which gives her a unique insight into the goings-on of the planet's puppet masters of the power pyramid, and I am super psyched to hear her thoughts on a whole host of strange topics, so let's dive into it. Carrie Cassidy, welcome to THC.
Hi, Greg. Thank you for me. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, Carrie, thanks so much for being here. I've been listening to your interviews for several years, always interesting. You're clearly at the forefront of conspiracy journalism. And just in the time since we've scheduled this interview, we've had another major event with the shooting at this French magazine. And we've learned enough by now to know that events are never really what they seem, with the true perpetrators usually putting the blame on some third party. Or we've even seen cases where they seem to have staged the entire event with crisis actors and wag the dog style media tricks. And I know you've been looking at this particular event pretty extensively. So tell us what you're seeing on this one, Carrie.
It's clearly a false flag, what we call a false flag. And the purpose, as you know, they just put apparently 10,000 troops on the streets in France. And that was yesterday's news. I haven't had a chance to actually see what might have transpired since then. But I can say there are so many parts of that story that don't hold up. I've written a number of articles about it, looked into the details and so on. There's very clear video showing, for example, that the police officer on the ground, the AK-47, did not shoot him in the head. It actually misses him on purpose, shooting the ground near him. And initially I thought, they just shot the ground on purpose and that was part of the staging. But Gordon Duff on Veterans Today has actually said that even that they weren't just shooting blanks, they were shooting some kind of air pellets or whatever kind of thing out of the gun that sort of disturbed the cement slightly, but didn't do what a real AK-47 would have done to the cement there. So that was ridiculous. There are so many things. one of the guys is making a mad escape, right, in the midst of so-called battle, and picks up a shoe that has somehow emerged from out of the car, or perhaps someone, it was in the Paris street when they drove up, or maybe they'd done some rehearsals there and somebody lost a shoe. I have no idea what. But the guy's clearly got shoes on his feet. You can see in several frames. So it's not his shoe. It's not his partner's shoe. So whose shoe is it? Or at least not. You know, he's got two shoes on. So, you know, there's all these ridiculous things. It's like laughable and sad at the same time.
Right.
The question is, the question I always have is, okay, where are the victims and where are where are the bodies of the dead people? You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. In other words, they're mourning these people. There certainly have to be, I think there were something like supposedly 11 people wounded, nobody being interviewed by the news as far as I can tell. Because we know the outside situation was staged. Then on top of it, a very convenient nabbing of the so-called perpetrators. Two of the guys supposedly left their ID in the car so conveniently that they were easily found. This is just, 9/11 sort of nonsense going on, like the passports found at 9/11. You know, see, to me, the disdain of the people that orchestrate these things, just banking on the stupidity of humanity and then driving people like us, the conspiracy, so-called conspiracy crazies over here who actually have, run down these details and know what's really going on. Just crazy because it's just pure arrogance. Mm-hmm. They just don't give a shit anymore.
No, they really don't, do they? But it does seem kind of odd because I've been spending a lot of time on your blog before this show, and I've looked at the evidence you're talking about. I've seen it. It does make a compelling case that some of what were shown on TV was faked. We've seen this other times too, but I can't wrap my head around why they would do this because it seems like we know they don't care about human life. So if they're trying to get away with a false flag, why involve all these crisis actors and planners and special effects, bringing it all to town? When the more elaborate you get, the easier it is to have slip-ups that like you and Gordon Duff have been detailing. And the more people you get involved, the more likely the secret will get out. It just seems so much simpler and easier to send in a few specialists with guns and shoot the place up and get out of there. I mean, you know what I'm saying? I'm not trying to deny the angle of a stage simulation. It just seems way sloppier and more complex than it needs to be when you can just use real weapons and real assassins, and then you don't have to put in all this effort into making it look real.
Well, I mean, I don't think it can be, sort of black and white in their scenario, because keep in mind that they have to make it appear as though something real is going on, because you've got your middle managers that need to be brought on board and need to play their roles appropriately. So they can't be completely read in. And we've got layers. It's like Richard Hoagland says, layers of the onion. So we've got a certain level of middle managers, like the police officer now that supposedly suicided himself,
right?
A day later while writing up the report on the Charlie Hebdo thing. You know, this is also absurd because this is a clear hit. This is just one of the many things they do to get rid of witnesses that know too much. And obviously the two guys who actually were hired or mind controlled to do the action, or even volunteered stupidly, maybe for a lot of money, had to be killed, so they couldn't talk. In mm-hmm. other words, so they're actually, I would say, walking a thin line between what they're doing, selling it to the masses so that it looks realistic, selling it to lower managers and middle managers that need to be bought in. So that they run out and run around and do whatever they're going to do, investigating and so on, so mm-hmm. they don't become suspicious in the process. And then, and well-intentioned people, like the guy probably writing his report, perfectly well-intentioned guy, right? Unfortunately, he started to realize there were too many anomalies, and that had to – then they have to do away with someone like that when they're too wide awake and too smart. So this is what's going on. I mean, I think that when people start to paint everything black and white, you lose your perspective. And so it's very important to keep a sense that these people are always walking in the shadows. Mm-hmm. They're always working in that area where things can appear to be not what they are, and yet on the same time, they can deceive huge masses of people, and they can carry out their magical act. Keeping in mind that a lot of these things that they're doing, false flags, are occult sort of acts that are wrapped in magical symbolism, so that they can carry out a certain energetic change in the fabric of humanity and so on. So
right.
So it has some deeper levels going on.
Yeah. Yeah, it definitely does. And well said. But now let me ask you, who do you think is ultimately responsible for this attack? Does this look like another CIA Mossad type operation, in your opinion?
Well, I would certainly say those are the usual suspects.
True.
But I, you know, obviously I can't claim knowledge on that. I can say that, you know, it is interesting to me that this is the way they've chosen to move forward at this time. I think that what happens is they are also dealing with a certain portion of the population, which is a growing portion, which are people like you and I who aren't buying any of it. Mm-hmm. And that war on terror idea has been ludicrous from the beginning. Anyone who knows that at this point, and most people should, but of course they don't, that 9/11 was an inside job. I mean, governments are aware that 9/11 was an inside job.
Right.
So when you just extrapolate from there, then they know the war on terror is a facade. They have to know. At that point, if you have somebody who's read in government enough to know it's a facade, then you need to give them a rationale for why you would do something like that, to keep them on board so they don't talk. Now, fear is one thing, payoffs are another, but getting somebody intellectually bought in to your concept is also something that they would endeavor to do. So I think that this is sort of a complex playing field that we're entering at this time. In other words, perception is, what do they say, 90% of the the thing. You know, it's all about, well, as Jim Morrison would say, but he borrowed it from what's his name, but Doors of Perception, you know.
Aldous Huxley, I believe.
Yes, we're in a hall of mirrors. And that goes... That has to do with everything. It has to do with perception of truth right now.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people not understanding, some people wanting to see things in black and white, hearing one thing and want to paint it in one way when in fact it might be its opposite. Do you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So it's really important, I think, that people don't rush to judgment the minute they hear anything. Because just rushing to judgment saying, okay, false flag, is it a blanket fake happening, or are there some people that really were killed?
Mm-hmm.
Which ones were killed? Why were those particular ones killed and not others? You know, you have to wrap your mind around all the details. I think it behooves us to think critically, you know, going forward.
Oh, of course. It's definitely an interesting bullet point on the elite's agenda. It happened, you know, right at the beginning of this year, and we really do need to let the dust kind of settle to see exactly how it plays out and what they're going to try to usher in as a result. These troops on the ground doesn't sound good. The talks about internet censorship and that people can't be criticizing their government online, I've heard a lot of that coming out of world leaders. So it does kind of fit that pattern of fake an event, bring in the agenda. They've been doing it to us for a very long time, and this is just another step on that path. But
yes.
Another thing I really did want to ask you about was these interviews with Captain Mark Richards. These are pretty awesome. Apparently this guy is in jail because the elite framed him for a murder, and you have to go into this prison and transcribe the interviews with them, and he has some very interesting information on a whole host of topics. One being Robin Williams, I guess. Can you tell us a little bit about the guy and his connection to Robin Williams?
Oh, sure. Well, they grew up together in the same area, Marin County. And I guess if I recall, they went to the same college or junior college, can't remember which, I think it was college. And so, yeah, they were friends. He kept in touch with him over the years. Apparently, his most recent wife tried to put a wedge between the two and did not want Robin, for whatever reason, and this becomes suspicious in and of itself, to write to Mark. And so their correspondence did fall off over the last few years, from what I understand. But he maintains a clear perspective on who Robin is and Robin's perspective on the world, et cetera. And was very astute in his analysis of what happened, what was said to be a suicide, basically saying that just isn't Robin. It's not what he would do. It's not his style. It's not his approach to life. And that he was read in on certain levels that, you know, that Mark is and that you and I are, but perhaps even deeper than the average person who's involved in this subject matter. In other words, because he knew Mark, for one thing, possibly also because of his celebrity status, he was privy to a certain amount of information that made him knowledgeable on a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
When you're like that, as you may consider yourself, you have even less desire to kill yourself under any circumstance because you're in a battle for planet Earth. You're in a battle on behalf of humanity. So therefore, your life is dedicated to service to humanity. So therefore, you wouldn't do a sort of a what is in essence a self-serving act like suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Sad to say. And, you know, I realize that's somewhat of a blanket statement because, you know, I don't like to criticize people that get to a very desperate place. But the bottom line is, you know, one has to sort of psychoanalyze on a certain level. What is it they say someone does, like in Robin's case? I thought it was appropriate because Mark said if he was going to do something like that, he'd jump off the Golden Gate Bridge. You know, he'd do something spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
And I think those of us who watched Robin over the years and loved his work and so on would also agree this man is not going to hang himself from a doorknob or whatever the hell it ended up to be.
Mm-hmm.
And the wife in the other room, I'm with kids, you know, I mean, no, I don't buy it. You know, it's a hit. He got too close to something. That's clear. And Joan Rivers, well, there's a lot of talk about that also. What appears to be the case, and this actually has gone on for years. Lenny Bruce, I think his name was, years ago, a very famous comedian,
yeah.
Excellent comedian, was taken out. There have been others. I know Richard Pryor has been targeted. I can't remember if he's alive or not.
He died, I believe, of old age.
Yeah. Well, I see they target comedians. Comedians are leaders of, you know, have a lot of public influence. They're leaders in their own right and major celebrities. There's a reason why they want to go after comedians. Now, I don't know what the Charlie Hebdo newspaper really was about because I never, you know, I don't read French and mm-hmm. so on, but they say they parodied all the various religions and so on, that they were critical, that they were funny. This is, again, the kind of thing they're going after right now. It appears there's a renewed effort to go after comics and that sort of sensibility. See, if you have humor, you are stepping back from the matrix on a certain level.
Right.
You have to have a certain level of skepticism, especially when you have dry humor, for example. So you can see how that's threatening to people who want you deep in the matrix, who want you to be deceived by everything they do. Humor thrives on truth.
Absolutely.
So therefore, they want to cut that off at the knees at a time when they want people to be anything but truthful. They want them living in a world of fantasy and be persuaded by the nonsense that they conduct, the smoke and mirrors again.
Absolutely. I could not agree with you more. I used to want to go into the comedy field and instead went into the conspiracy field. And then I see how closely related they really are. I mean, guys like Dave Chappelle and Cat Williams have been victims of it. But also, another thing in recent news is this Bill Cosby saga. And I'm hearing two sides, because there's the one side that says higher ups in the Hollywood elite obviously are taking advantage of young girls, young kids. We have that thread that's very pervasive. And then also there's the idea that as a comedian, he's being quote unquote taken out in a way by being completely marginalized and his career is destroyed. He is effectively dead. So it's, I'm very curious on what side of the fence you might be on this one.
Yeah. The same thing happened to Robin Williams, but
Michael Jackson.
Certainly they took out Michael Jackson, but he wasn't per se a comedian. But no, Woody Allen. Look, I don't know how truthful it was. It seems convenient. I think nearly destroyed the guy's career. Again, we have a comedian who is used to looking at the truth, making fun of the nonsense that goes on, the social so-called mores, the rules and regulations that most people follow unquestionably. They will point to, they will wake people up on that level. So there's a reason to go after these guys. I'm not following the details on Cosby, but I can say it fits a pattern that's happening right now. And this is a frightening pattern. I would say that there are many other things also that I wanted to kind of bring up about Mark Richards, because certainly that was a small portion of our interview last time. I've actually interviewed him three times now. So I go up to the prison where he's being held in Northern California. I'm accompanied by his wife, Joanne Richards, she's a speaker on the circuit. Lovely woman, very intelligent. And she's been out there talking about Mark Richards and his work for a long time. She publishes his work and does writing of her own. And you know, they're quite a formidable team, to be honest. He's just amazing. That's all I can say about him. He's extremely intelligent, very well read. He's somebody that they had to come up with a sort of a false flag accusation in order to make it fly. It had to be so outlandish, and it is, you know. And then he gets thrown in jail over it. I can tell you that back channel just recently, I had someone who through a third party tried to contacted a candidate for governor or for some office here in California, who then was looking into the Mark Richards case about getting him released. He's been in prison for 30 years on these charges. And the guy got a visit by several so-called men in black. And he withdrew his candidacy and he disappeared. He went off grid. So then there was another person who, a young person, I'm just trying to be as vague as possible to keep the heat away from these people, but apparently was also threatened, received a visit when that person went to look for some records on the trial that were not easy to obtain. So this is what they do. They get somebody trumped up on charges who has a great deal of knowledge, who was a renegade even when he was in the secret space program, a known renegade. He writes about it. So you can read his books, which are available. They're publications and soon to be books that Joanne sells for very small prices on her website, Earth Defense. I haven't got it in front of me. So it's starts with the word Earth Defense, I believe.
Right on.
And it's on my website.
Okay, it is on your website, but this Mark Richards guy, very interesting. Apparently, he flew a craft for the secret space program before they put him in jail.
Oh yeah, I mean he was captain. He was like I guess you might say like an Enterprise mission type of captain.
Wow.
So he was, you know, very high level, an officer, and conducts himself even to this day in that manner. You know, he is, I noticed that the other, the men in prison are very respectful of him. There are attempts of his, on his life periodically in the prison. He's highly skilled in self-defense, as one can assume, and is actually the case, but it doesn't stop them from trying from time to time. Various factions, there are other factions. There are some people trying to keep him alive while he's in prison. They have a vested interest in not letting this man out.
Right.
So my interviews with him are covering all sorts of things. He was really flying interstellar, even making jumps interdimensionally. From what I understand, talks about special fuel from neutron stars that they've now gotten access to that is beyond what he says, beyond free energy, and allows them to go interstellar and interdimensionally. He says various ET races are not happy about that. You know, there's so much to the interviews. It would not even be possible to go into all the details. But, you know, if you have specific questions, I'm happy to answer them.
Absolutely. I actually do. One aspect to this, you know, we hear about a lot of different alien races, but he specifically talks about this alien race of raptors, which is really interesting. I guess they were, you know, were told all the dinosaurs went extinct 65 million years ago. But according to Mark, this raptor faction of intelligent beings used some type of secret energy. They stole some type of technology and actually got off planet. Is that right?
Yes. And apparently after some delay in which they were, I guess, poised on the edge of the galactic center for a period of time, unclear of where they were, had sort of lost their way. Their spaceships made it to a planet in the Draco system that they then, I guess, terraformed and took over. That's where their race sort of evolves since that point. But a portion of them stayed behind, apparently, went underground, and if I understand the story correctly, are now the enemies of humans and the enemies of that other faction of Draco, of Raptor. So we have, in other words, a split in their own group, and just like humans.
Right.
And so they have come back to align themselves with humans. They found, they looked into the future. Their queen, as I think they call her, has the ability to look into the future, and saw that if they align themselves with humans on a positive note, that they their future was positive. So they changed their trajectory. Instead of seeing us as the enemy and eating us, in essence, they became aligned with a certain faction of our military. Mm-hmm. And that's they are now working with them. Apparently they worked with them in, the Falklands War. And I think that's around the time when the turning point happened. They made a treaty with humans, and basically they consider Earth their home. It is their original home. But there is at least two races of reptilians here on Earth who are enemies of humans and want to see us off the planet.
Man. Another thing on this raptor faction, apparently a part of their changing their tune with humanity is that they're working with Hollywood, I guess, to improve the perception of raptors, which I think is really interesting because we have a new Jurassic Park movie coming out this year. It'll be interesting to see how the raptors are perceived in that movie. But apparently there's a movie or something called Walking with Dinosaurs that they might have actually appeared in next to CG dinosaurs.
Yeah, that's what Mark says. I mean, you know,
Wow.
I mean, the jury's still out on that one, I have to say, of course.
I got to watch it at least.
Yeah, well, actually, Walking with Dinosaurs is not a movie. It's at least to my knowledge, it's a live theatrical show.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And it travels around the world and apparently is coming to Sacramento sometime, maybe even this month, if I recall. I can't remember when I interviewed him exactly. He said it was an upcoming date. You know, I am rather interested to go see that for that purpose.
Absolutely. Yeah.
I don't know how they'd carry out something like that. But I think it's fascinating. I think it does sound like they have, you know, as it's, I know that it's, this sounds outlandish to people when they listen, especially if you're not, you know, not sort of a contactee and you haven't really gone down the rabbit hole in this regard. But I can say that if you extrapolate what goes on and the, sort of re-evolution, if you will, of humanity back to source, then you can understand that all different beings are also on that same journey. And along that journey, it's not out of the question to assume that a dinosaur species would then develop, first of all, that was fairly intelligent, even as, you know, run-of-the-mill dinosaurs, mm-hmm. vying for control of the planet, even back in the, you know, the days that people hear about 65 million years ago, or whatever they say it was. And then to have evolved even higher intelligence from there, in spite of their physicality, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
Or maybe even with the aid of it. And apparently in the multiverse, the sort of reptilian form is, you know, is a completely viable, durable form. So this is just the form spirit takes. On a certain level, they don't have to also remain on the negative side of service to self, as we call it. There are transitional groups of reptilians that have moved over to the other side, just as humans are in the process of doing. Mm-hmm. So it behooves people, I think, to think in terms of spirituality when you look at this sector and not simply nuts and bolts practicality.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And though this is a very open-minded audience, we love to get to that deep level stuff. And, you know, this is somewhat new to me, but not outside of the realm of similar things that we've talked about before. But, you know, I'm super glad that you could come here because it's only been a half hour. We're already getting into some pretty wild stuff. But, I mean, that does lead me to ask you, how do you vet someone? How do we separate the real stuff from people who just want attention or are trying to sell books or even worse, are active disinfo agents? How can we kind of separate the wheat from the chaff in this realm? It's so tough.
Absolutely. Well, let me say that, first of all, I've been doing this for nearly 9 years, which is kind of around the clock occupation. I don't just close. I don't just come home and it's all over. I'm constantly, if you might call it, on call and being communicated with from various sources that have contacted me in the past and so on. So this is an ongoing investigation, I think is the best way to look at it. And I am open-minded along those lines. But in terms of determining what's truth from fiction, in the early days of Camelot, first of all, I did a lot of meditation before I ever entered Camelot. And I also did a great deal of investigation. And I also worked at JPL, Jet Propulsion Lab, in communications, so I wasn't really in science, but I was hired because of my skills, because I'd worked for 20 years in Hollywood, and they wanted to utilize some of my sort of skills to entertain and communicate at the same time, right?
Mm-hmm.
So while I was there, I saw sort of close up the what you might call NASA's community, because JPL is really very deeply connected to NASA, for all intents and purposes. And at any rate, so I really saw things very close to the inside at that point. But I also grew up in Northern California, and I was born in Moffett Field, that as it happens years later, I found out has a huge underground base. Uh-huh. And I interviewed Norm Bergram, who is a very fascinating scientist who is in his 80s, believe it or not, when I interviewed him. He was the one who wrote the book Ringmakers of Saturn, and posited that ships were making those rings around Saturn, and that those ships were on the way here. And this was many years ago that he wrote the book, and we were referred to him by John Lear, for those that are interested, and highly recommend that interview with both men, actually, but you know, with Norm Bergman in this case. And at one point, he just, you know, when I told him I was born at Moffett Field Hospital, he gave me a look. And that look told me many, many things. I am psychic. It has proven itself over time to me and been very useful in determining, you know, the path Camelot should take, whether we should interview one person or not interview someone else, et cetera. Another thing that in terms of the way we work, we do triangulate information. So just like the intelligence agencies, we basically look for three sources which are unrelated, that are coming from completely different directions, that don't know each other, and they are all talking about the same thing. At that point, it is considered something worth investigating on a deeper level. Sometimes I don't always have those three sources, although, you know, sometimes I'll start out with the one source. The other two will start to emerge sometimes months, sometimes days, sometimes years later. So it's like you stay on the investigation, and as things come up, you track whether or not they have appeared before, and then they start to sort of gain credence as you move forward. But the other thing that I do, aside from using psychic perception and what is in essence this triangulation of information, prior, you know, investigations I've done, and in the case when I used to have a partner, Bill Ryan, the both of us had a strong background in investigating this sector before we got into it. So that was very helpful, because you begin to separate the truth from the falsity even as you investigate on your own. Mm-hmm. And then ultimately, you know, we get to know our witnesses very well. It's not just a one-shot deal. Oftentimes they become friends. Later, sometimes they turn on us in most inexplicable ways that indicate programming and targeting electronically by the powers that be. Mm. Super soldiers are absolutely notorious in that way. You know, the last thing I would say is what resonates. And that is I think one of the best methods for determining what's true and what's false. And it means that you use more than just your intellect to determine whether something is true, or whether a person is worth listening to, and whether they're true or false. And you're bringing in the heart, the emotional body, along with the mental body. You're bringing in all your senses beyond the six that we conventionally think of humans having. And you begin to sort of access your own sort of abilities in these areas. And in doing so, you open yourself up and you begin to feel what in essence resonates. And there's in a certain level, there's really a physiological component to resonation, you know, to when something resonates.
Yeah. You just got to use that internal barometer and trust yourself a little bit, but let's get into a little bit of this subtext about the ET races. You touched on it a little bit, but we hear so much about them aligning with different governments on the planet. Apparently, from some people, they're saying that the US and Israel are working with perhaps the Anunnaki. Russia and China have their own groups. It gets very muddy. Can you kind of tell us about, with these global superpowers, who's kind of aligned with who?
Well, yeah, it's kind of a mess out there. I can say that even when you look at the military here in America, militaries are aligned with different groups. So when you've got militaries within your own country that are aligning themselves with certain factions, in other words, it is said early on that the army was aligning themselves with grays. And those grays had a negative agenda for humanity, unbeknownst to the army at the time. Or at least portions of the army. The CIA is certainly aligning itself with various different factions, I would say, at this time. There's no doubt whatsoever. Navy, which has always sort of run the game behind the scenes with regard to the ET question, so to speak, has been aligned with various races, and the Air Force with another race. I think the Air Force are the ones that are most known for aligning first with the Raptors, for example, and certain members of the Navy. But Mark has a background in the, you know, as a captain in the Navy, but he also has done work for the Air Force, and so on. So we know at this time, for example, I'm being told that the Chinese have aligned themselves with a certain race of negative-oriented reptilians, the same with Iran, for example. Part of the problem we had with Japan in World War II was that they were aligned with a race of very, from what I understand, negatively-oriented reptilians, and that an interesting revelation that came out of my more recent interview with Mark was that Hiroshima and Nagasaki were bombed because they were trying to eliminate a reptilian race underground in those vicinities, their bases. So this is what we're dealing with. We're really dealing with a huge mixture. And yes, Israel does seem to be aligned with a race of Anunnaki who have a base in underground, I'm told, in Dimona, although there could be other places, central places for them as well. Again, this is triangulated information, many times, corroborated by my various witnesses, high-level witnesses that have already been vetted in some cases, sometimes new people that come along with new stories that then corroborate former information. So when I'm talking about all of this, I am not just getting this from one source. This is from multiple sources.
Yeah, and that's what's so great about having you here, because, you know, I'll interview someone and it's just that person's opinion, kind of, and then we go to the next week and it's the totally opposite end of the spectrum. So this is great because you do have that kind of, you can source from so many different areas and pull together a complete story, but it's so confusing and so integrated when it comes to the ET situation. I also saw a blog that you wrote that was pretty interesting where you talked about the banking crash of 2008 and how it actually had a lot to do with covering up alien investments in some of these banks, sometimes as much as $300 million a day, according to, I guess, some of your whistleblowers.
That sounds like Mark Richards again. And that was a very interesting component from his recent interview that he did with me. You know, a fount of knowledge, let me just say that. The man just, you know, and I never know what I'm going to get from him, you know. And some of these things come really out of what you might say left field. Like I wouldn't even know to ask the question. And yet somehow if I ask a certain question, then he goes down a road that is oftentimes unexpected. And that was one of the areas. But yeah, I mean... It's fascinating that they are the Black Projects, the funding of the Black Projects, the funding of the Secret Space Program. That story is a huge story. And that is a story that is, of all the stories that we have in this sector, the most likely to cross over, in my opinion, you know, into the mainstream. Mm-hmm. Because money talks, right? This is where people kind of are focused on this planet, you know, especially again in the mainstream. So when you start getting into the funding of Black projects and the and where these monies come from, whether it be, you know, putting in bank accounts that where the owner is undisclosed and is in essence a member of another race, in essence, having to do business on this planet with what, you know, with money. This is the energetic sort of means of exchange. So that's what we have going on. We've also got an artificial intelligence that weighs in this this area. Mm. So that's where the Surveillance Society, Edward Snowden's disclosures. And it's important to understand that I'm actually reading my second book on Snowden at this time, and that there were a lot of nuances to the disclosures that were made, the method in which they were made, and the journalists, how they rolled out certain information in a certain sort of steady stream. And there's one book out there that I'm currently reading that is, and I'm going to see if I can find the title during our conversation here so I can put it, you know, just make people aware of it. What fascinates me about these stories when I get into mainstream investigations, such as Snowden, I consider that mainstream,
yeah,
you know, is to look at sort of this hall of mirrors and figure out, is this person a real whistleblower? If so, what is his investment? What is he trying to say? And what might be, disinformation along those lines, et cetera, or what might be not recognized as having the value that it really has. You can't throw these things just out of hand and say, well, this person does this or that. It's just not, it's not going to educate you as to what's really going on. So this is what I think it's really important people need to do. But I am looking to see which, I think it's called the Snowden Files. I think it's very important that people go down this rabbit hole, because what happens is, as you see with the latest move with Charlie Hebdo, there's also a move to shut down freedom on the internet in a big way.
Right.
Freedom of press is always very threatening to them. And so in light of that, their attacks and who they attack and why they attack is crucial to start to understand. And so this book is helpful in terms of telling the mainstream story about what went on. Actually, it's called The Edward Snowden Affair, I believe. So there's two books. One, The Snowden Files, is very, very good. The one I am in the process of reading is The Snowden Affair, Exposing the Politics and Media Behind What Happened. And in that book, the author is actually analyzing the legislation, the attempts at legislation, the attempts to shoot down legislation as a result of the revelations that Snowden made. Now, that's pertinent because just recently, of course, the NSA is now once again trying to increase their access to our civil liberties and granting themselves new powers. There's an article I was just looking at here. NSA chief pushes a bill for granting new powers to the NSA. You can see how these false flags play into this in a big way.
Right.
And I spend time in the UK right now, quite a bit on and off when possible. I have a place to stay there. And I've been watching that press and their leaders and Cameron and so on. And it's fascinating how they orchestrate their own sort of disinfo campaign towards those people is different than the way the United States handles their sort of their media and their disinfo campaign. So when you come from outside the country, I guess you sort of develop abilities to sort of see this in play. And you can probably look at France from the outside and see how their press is playing into these deceptions as well. Fascinating study for people that might want to go down that road.
Yeah, it's great to be able to have that insight of being on both sides. You know, I'm stuck here in the American bubble, and yeah, we have the internet, but I mean, even that only gets you so far. I did want to ask you a little bit about the Vatican, because I'm sure they have a very serious role to play. I've been told that they have their own shadow leadership, as well as maybe even being instrumental in collecting our negative energy and using their advanced observatories to kind of channel it into the right areas of space where maybe these spiritual archon-like parasites can harvest it. Does that sound right to you, or can you share any aspects of the role of the Vatican to us?
Actually, yeah, that sounds completely viable. I can say that the evidence we have from people like Leo Zagami many years ago, who was a whistleblower from the P2 Lodge, high level of the Illuminati occult, basically under the beck and call, I believe, of the Black Pope. I can say that he corroborated, as well as countless other witnesses, people that I've interviewed and people that have been off record talking about the reptilian base underneath the Vatican, what's going on there. According to Mark Richards, there's not just a reptilian base, but there's a base where ETs from all over off planet can go, and that many negative ETs are welcomed there. And they supposedly have to put their weapons aside while they're sort of there visiting. But this is the kind of thing, I mean, it's the duplicity in terms of the Vatican Library, where the secrets are held, and from the Library of Alexandria, where they were secreted there. The stuff is just amazing.
It is.
The levels of deception are actually pretty mind boggling. And, I think we are beginning to delve, down deeper and deeper into those deceptions. But I think there are still some levels in which we haven't gotten a whistleblower. We haven't gotten even psychic information, looking forward and backward. I consider all of us time travelers. So if you want to look forward in time or backward in time, we have the ability to do that. You can travel, in essence, with or without your physical body to these times. there are more secrets to be had, I'm sure, under the Vatican.
Oh, yeah. I can only imagine the things we know, or even the rumors we have. If someone doesn't talk about it, we don't know. So I'd assume at least more than half of the stuff is just a complete secret to even us, even people who are trying to get the answers, when most of the mainstream could care less. But, you know, we're out there digging, and it's even really hard to get more than just some unsubstantiated rumors. But another thing I wanted to get into, a couple of questions about understanding the planet, because so much of that is kind of a false reality that people are walking around in. And we have had some guests here who've talked about dolphins. And I'm kind of curious, because some people say dolphins are really important. I've heard everything from them being some type of alien themselves to the idea that vaccines have been a campaign to cause autism in humans who have dolphin genetics of some type. It is a really weird area, but it's you can't deny that there's an allure to dolphins, and that there's definitely some weird regulation in how we interact with dolphins. And I'm kind of curious if any of your whistleblowers have brought this up.
Absolutely. I mean, Aaron McCullum, of course, is I would say what you might call a dolphin human hybrid. He's a super soldier that I interviewed several times, and kind of has gone off the grid at this time. But I can say that this program, he wasn't the only one coming forward with information about having dolphin DNA and having memories of certain abilities to breathe underwater and things of this nature. It's fascinating. I mean, there's no doubt that dolphins are an ET race. I mean, we are an ET race, for that matter. Certain factions of us are different ET races. We are combinations of at least 12 DNA from at least 12 different ET races. The human itself, this vehicle, is I believe a hybrid. We are a hybrid race, in essence. So with that in mind, that means that we have access to the so-called powers, or superpowers, if you will, of all those 12 races that we access on various levels and various degrees, depending on the individual and their mixture. So yes, there's a huge campaign within the military to use dolphins to access their intelligence, to learn their language. Richard Allen Miller is someone who, at a young age, a brilliant physicist who I've interviewed a number of times, he was deep in the secret space program for quite a while. Training super soldiers, training special forces to use their and develop their sort of beyond the sixth senses, if you will. But one thing he did was work with, I guess, John Lilly and dolphins, and deciphering the dolphin language. Mm. That was actually something he did. On top of that, dolphins have been used. They're always trying to make dolphin human hybrids, because of the sort of the cross capabilities, I guess you might call it, in terms of super soldier things in a certain sense, our oceans are another form of space that is unexplored largely. Mm-hmm. And so the abilities to go deeper into the oceans to explore what's really there, certainly our history is, much of the history of planet Earth is buried beneath the oceans. So there's got to be motivation on that level, because there's always an interest in the secret space program to get better technologies, to learn more from the ancient past, because humanity has had higher levels of civilization technologically than we have now. And Atlantis was one of them. We are now reaching the levels of Atlantis, apparently. And many of us have reincarnated from those times, if you want to call it that. So in answer to your question, no doubt about it, dolphins are T-race. Very highly intelligent. I have swum with dolphins in Hawaii, and I can tell you that they also exude energetics that puts you into an altered state. And in swimming with them, I can say that I became so dolphin. I don't know. Maybe I have some empathic qualities, so perhaps totally empathic or something beyond that. When I came, I knew I was coming back to shore. I was approaching the shore, after swimming with the dolphins at one point, and I couldn't remember that I had legs. Huh. I actually was trying to figure out how I was going to walk.
Weird.
You know, it was just a sort of a short couple second sort of blank in my mind. But what it told me is how close we really are to dolphins. And I do believe that humans in general, at least some of us, have a strong affinity, and perhaps some of our DNA, larger portions of our DNA, be maybe more oriented towards that race of beings.
Yeah, wow, that is really interesting. I'm glad I asked that question. That was one of those things I wasn't sure where we'd get there. But on the topic of unexplored space, you know, you said much of it is under the ocean. There also apparently is a lot under the land as well. We hear about underground bases and even huge underground cities possibly, and that's pretty easy for me to believe. But then we also hear about these possible polar openings and the idea of an inner Earth with its own continents and places like Agartha or Shangri-La. Do you think there's any validity to that idea, that the planet could really be that different from what the mainstream is saying?
Oh, absolutely. I think that the matrix in which we live, it lies on every level and constantly. So there's actually nothing that I won't consider pretty much at this point. There's no doubt about it. I've done a lot of investigation along these lines. I sort of got by accident into investigating ancient archaeology, and by going, first of all, I started visiting Michael Tellinger in South Africa. I went to Adam's Calendar. Mm. Now I've been to South Africa like four times, to Adam's Calendar and to the Standing Stone sites there. The Anunnaki influence in that particular place, the fact that that's clearly a portal on the side of a cliff, a very spectacular setting. The energetics are amazing. Apparently computers go completely wacky within that stone circle, and so do compasses and all of that. This is just one of many sites on planet Earth. I also have been doing an investigation on Malta. Malta is a really spectacularly interesting place. I'm hoping to take a group there. Haven't been able to raise the money so far, but I'm looking into doing that. If not this spring, then next fall, if things go well. This is a highly secret place, a place where there are a lot of ET ruins, according to Mark Richards, which I didn't know he knew anything about Malta, and I asked him about that, thinking that I wasn't going to go anywhere. And turns out he not only knows about Malta, but he was planning to write a book about Malta, of all things. So, but the Vatican has hidden treasures, I'm convinced, in Malta. And the Freemasons have a Knights Templar, of course, Knights of Malta, have a base there that I believe has probably a lot of secrets hidden in it, maybe even underground, on a very significant power place, I'm told. Mm-hmm. I've interviewed a number of people on the island of Malta, investigators into the history behind Malta, the links to Atlantis. I believe it was an outpost of Atlantis. There are people who believe Malta is actually was one of the centers of Atlantis. I don't think that's the case. However, there's no doubt whatsoever that it was a refuge, a place where they would hide treasures and hide ancient knowledge, even at the times of Atlantis. So the secrets that are buried there are extensive.
Wow.
And the energetics there are also extensive. So it is something of a central pillar point on planet Earth. And as such, it draws in energies and also can send energies out. So if you're wondering where the Vatican might go to access sort of off-planet places, Malta is a very likely candidate.
Wow, that's awesome. And I hope you end up making it out there to do that serious investigation. That would be pretty groundbreaking, I think.
Thank you. Yeah, I have already been there once, and I did make a short film of it. It's available on my website for those interested. If you go to events on my across the top and click on events, you can read all about my planned trip to Malta if you scroll down on that events page. And yeah, fascinating study.
Man, we covered so much ground. Very awesome. I'm so glad we could do this and get as deep as we did. I'm glad I could meet you. I appreciate what you do and your time. But I guess before we really call it in, would you like to remind the people where they can keep up with what you're doing and with Project Camelot?
Sure. ProjectCamelotPortal.com is one URL. ProjectCamelot.org is another that works. And ProjectCamelot.tv is another one, which should work. Let me say that I am putting together a television channel, network, whatever you want to call it, bringing together the best hosts in this sector from around the world. And I actually did announce that on my website. We are working very diligently in that direction at this time. I think it's time that we put a lot of these people together in one place and give them, you know, television shows in essence.
Yeah.
And also make sure they get paid for doing all the work they do.
True.
People don't realize that most of the people in radio simply don't make any money at all if you're on the internet. So I'm hoping to sort of change that paradigm. And also, none of us intend to get rich doing this, but I do think that if we have subscribers and eliminate, we'll have, we're going to make it available to be a channel with television shows, as I say, for the best hosts out there. And then at the same time, be free on YouTube for people that are willing to watch ads and for people that don't want ads if they subscribe and support the channel for the very low amount of money, which is $2.99 or $3. Wow. I haven't decided whether to eliminate that penny or not, but like to be dirt cheap a month on a monthly basis and yet ask people to support us and to support the effort of all these hosts, you would be amazed at how financially viable that sort of model is.
Yeah.
And we're really hoping to therefore make this possible, to bring on the technical help that we need to pay them. It's very hard nowadays to get anybody to help you technically if you don't pay them, as many people know.
True.
We have a very hard time staying alive, so we also welcome donations to keep the work happening. For people that wonder, I often have a place to stay in Britain at this time. And from there I jump onto the European continent and I'm able to do speaking events to make my travel possible and pay for my hotels, which most people who invite me to speak can't afford to pay. So this is what goes on. It's a weird trade-off and it's a very convoluted kind of model, but this is what I try to do. And we're always wondering how we're going to pay the rent from one month to the next. So that in mind and help us to make this work possible. I appreciate it.
Yeah, well, that sounds great. I'm excited to see that roll out. I deal with that kind of business model myself, and it's working okay for me here. So I don't doubt that with all the great names coming together, you'll have a lot of success there as well. So best of luck there. And Carrie, thanks again for doing this. It has been an honor and a pleasure, and stay safe out there, all right?
Okay, thank you so much, Greg.
You got it. Take care.
All right, bye-bye.
Wow, guys, there it is. Many thanks to Carrie. I know she's usually on the other side of the interview, so coming by and being a guest on THC, not something she needed to do, so that was very cool of her. And we covered a lot of topics. False flags, Robin Williams, Joan Rivers, the Raptor race of ETs, dolphin genetics, and so much more. Just the type of diversity I would hope for with a guest like Carrie. Also, as many of you know, I try to trim so much fat off what other shows are doing and get right down to business, all without third-party advertisers, because this show is supported by the Higher Side Chatters who subscribe for the $5 a month, and as a result, they get a second hour of the five shows I put together every month. In this show with Carrie, we continued on to talk about portals and stargates and the hidden subtext to geopolitics and the ongoing effort by shadow governments to get a lockdown on these places. We talked about Obama and the mysteries behind him, the idea that he might have been cloned or genetically altered to fulfill the ancient prophecies some members of the power pyramid are a little obsessed with. But Carrie also did share some of her time travel experiences in Egypt and the ethereal battle she witnessed above the Great Pyramid at the end of 2012. It's wild stuff, and if you're interested in that and all the extended THC shows, go over to the HigherSideChatsPlus.com. It is a separate website. I'm still getting
some confusion on that. And for $5 a month, I'll give you 5 shows until the day I die. We also have conspiracy-themed t-shirts and THC-themed herb grinders at conspiraties.net. And I just can't thank everybody enough for keeping the THC ship afloat. I get a ton of positive messages and comments, and I do read every one and try to at least say thanks, but many of you have found some type of inspiration in what I'm doing here and really are just starting to knuckle down on your own passion projects, and I think that's what this should really all be about. You know, we can talk about the spiritual battle and the harvesting of energy by the demon overlords of the Illuminati, and I am so, so interested in continuing to do that, but we can't be paralyzed by it. See, I look at the macro scale and the micro scale. And when we're dealing with the macro, the big picture, the global debt-based system of rule, yeah, it's bad. Corruption at every turn. But on the micro scale in your own life, if you're doing well enough to be listening to a podcast, you're already in the top 2/3 of the planet, and is the militarization of the police really keeping you from following your dream? Someday it might, but unless you're planning to sell cigarettes one at a time, they're probably not going to kill you today. Yes, the elite are running amok, destroying the lives of many, almost on the verge of collapsing our system, hiding us from so much of our past, present, and future, it's hard not to get worked up about it. But you gotta find your happiness despite all that. There's only one life to live. I know you work that 8 or 9 hours a day, you get home, you just want to melt into a couple episodes of Friends. I get that. I did that for 10 years. But that's what David Rockefeller spent half his fortune urging you to do. It's what they laugh about at the masquerade balls, how dumb and lazy we all are, and it's time to prove them wrong. And we've all grown up in this pre-planned program. There's nothing wrong with that. Some people are more addicted to one aspect of it than another, but pop whatever control dispensing teat they've got you suckling on right out of your mouth and work towards greatness. Me, I have never fallen for the cigarette trap. I got out of the 9-to-5 trap, but I cannot stop drinking soda and eating garbage from the drive-thru. It happens. We realize it, we curb it, we work towards progress. And when you work those 40 hours a week for a company you don't care about, you gotta consider how many hours you're giving to yourself, someone you do care about. Think about how long you've had the job you have now, how many years you've perhaps had it, and how often during that time you've sectioned out work shifts for your own life and your own betterment. It probably hasn't happened that often. So think about which day you're gonna call in sick next week and do that for yourself. Start your own thing, bust your ass, build yourself up without the small crutch they provide, overcome their obstacles, and we really can find our own little happiness and still hold a microscope to the multitude of crimes and corruptions that run this world without it really holding us back, without being stuck in a state of fear or worry. Sort of what I always say, but I'm getting so many messages from people who've hopped off the hamster wheel because of THC. And I never considered how awesome that would be, and so major kudos to those people, and best of luck to everyone. Thanks for listening. Please come join us at thehiresidechatsplus.com for more. I'm Greg Carlwood, signing off. Your move, Matrix Manipulators of the Modern Era. Your frickin' move. Have you been up late nights? It's okay, it's just been hard to sleep. It seems so in your eyes. It's just that work has been getting to me. About your boss. He's not feeling well, but he's alright. There's something I can do. Thanks for offering, but I'll be fine. Everyone wants to feel safe in the dark. Everyone wants to feel safe in the dark. Have you been up late nights? In your eyes. It's just the sickness has been getting to me. But what about your bow? Can you help or can you make the time? I'll do all I can do. Just don't worry about me, I'll be fine. Everyone wants to feel safe in the dark. Everyone wants to feel safe in the dark. Strings in your heart. Everyone wants to feel
said you're not alright.
You take care of you.
There's something bigger going on this time.